Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashley Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Melissa L. Johnson, MD, the Director of Lung Cancer Research at Sarah Cannon Research Institute and Chair of the Cancer Committee at TriStar Centennial Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. Dr. Johnson joined us to talk about the FDA approval of tremelimumab plus durvalumab and chemotherapy in non-small cell lung cancer. On November 10, 2022, the FDA granted approval to the combination of tremelimumab, durvalumab, and platinum-based chemotherapy in adults with metastatic non-small cell lung cancer without sensitizing EGFR mutations or ALK aberrations. This approval was supported by findings from the Phase 3 Poseidon trial, in which the combination resulted in a 23% reduction in the risk of death over chemotherapy alone. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Johnson discussed the significance of this approval, shared key data from Poseidon, and noted the combination's efficacy and tolerability in various patient populations. Just to start off, what is the significance of this approval?
The FDA approval of the Poseidon regimen, durvalumab, tremelimumab, and platinum-based chemotherapy is significant for a couple different reasons. First of all, it adds one more option for the treatment of patients with newly diagnosed lung cancer to receive chemo and immune therapy together. A couple differences with the Poseidon regimen as opposed to some of the other FDA-approved regimens. This includes a short course of anti-CTLA-4 tremelimumab, so 5 doses, and then durvalumab till progression. So this allows not just the patient to get chemotherapy and immune therapy, but in particular, anti-CTLA-4, we think does add to the potential of durability of response, maybe a little bit more than PD-1 or PD-L1 alone. Another potential advantage of the Poseidon regimen is that it appears to work perhaps a little better for patients with those difficult to treat mutations, patients with STK11, KEAP1 alterations that had improved overall survival when treated with durva-tremi chemo versus durva chemo or chemotherapy. And so in particular for patients in whom we're looking for something that works a little bit better or for a little bit longer, the Poseidon regimen adds to our armamentarium.
Could you just discuss some key efficacy data from this trial?
Poseidon was a 3-arm trial. Patients were randomized to receive one of 3 arms, either chemotherapy alone for 6 cycles, chemotherapy and durvalumab for 4 cycles, followed by durva maintenance until progression, or chemotherapy, durvalumab, and tremelimumab for 4 cycles, a 5th dose of tremelimumab at week 16, and then durvalumab until progression. Primary endpoints of the trial were PFS and overall survival in patients who received durva chemo versus chemo, and key secondary endpoints included PFS and overall survival for patients that got durva tremi chemo versus chemo. And these secondary endpoints were alpha controlled. So the fact that the primary endpoint for PFS was met allowed the secondary endpoints for durva tremi chemo versus chemo to be explored. Importantly, patients who got durva-tremi chemo versus chemo had improved PFS and overall survival versus chemotherapy. And in the updated analysis that looked at survival in almost 4 years with a 3-year overall survival data looked particularly good for patients who received the tremelimumab, durvalumab, and chemotherapy versus either of the 2 arms in every subset that was tested.
Just in general, what does the safety profile look like for this combination?
One of the questions we all had as the Poseidon trial began was whether you could really add a 4th drug and not decrease the safety or the tolerability of this regimen. And in actuality, we found that patients did really well. In fact, the safety was almost as good with durva-tremi chemo as it was with durva chemotherapy. That's exciting to know, but it also shouldn't be that much of a surprise to us because compared to when we started these trials, we are all a lot more familiar with identifying IRAEs, immune-related adverse events, and we're a lot more comfortable giving steroids quickly and at high enough doses in order to stop the side effects from getting worse. So I think it does reflect an improvement in our field to manage these side effects as much as it's a well-tolerated regimen.
Are there any patients in which you would avoid this regimen due to these toxicities?
I think we're always a little reticent to use chemoimmune therapy for patients with autoimmune past medical history, either lupus or multiple sclerosis, systemic autoimmune conditions for which these patients have been on lifelong immunosuppression. You just wonder whether stimulating the immune system with these drugs may cause a worsening in those other medical problems. Other than that, I think the patients that did less well in this trial were patients with squamous histology. So this might not be the first regimen that I would use for patients with that designation.
So then, how do you see this regimen fitting into the overall treatment landscape for this population?
So the frontline treatment for non-small cell lung cancer continues to get more complicated. The good news is that we're moving to a place where we're not going to treat all patients with the same, i.e., chemoimmune therapy. And we shouldn't be surprised by this because we know every lung cancer patient to be different. We've been doing next generation sequencing on all of our patients upfront for a while now, and we'll continue to find ways to do that with more ease in our clinics. And so we know a lot more about these patients other than the histology of their tumor at the time that we're assigning therapy. All of that to say, I typically reserve immune therapy alone, so PD-1 or PD-L1 inhibitors for patients that are totally asymptomatic and PD-L1 score greater than 50%. For patients with any symptoms, I'm adding chemotherapy, irrespective of their PD-L1 score, because those patients need shrinkage fast, shortness of breath, pain, cachexia, for example. I think that there are patients with other molecular alterations like EGFR, ALK, ROS1, where, of course, we wouldn't do chemoimmune therapy, we would do targeted therapies. And so now, with the updated data from the POSEIDON trial reported at World Lung and ESMO in 2022, we should be identifying patients with STK11 alterations and KEAP1 alterations and perhaps treating them with the POSEIDON regimen. We don't know that that's the best thing for them, but what we do know is there is data with some of these other regimens suggesting that these patients do less well.
Looking forward, is there any ongoing or upcoming research in the non-small cell lung cancer space at Sarah Cannon that you're involved in or excited about that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, I think just as an example of the fact that all lung cancer patients should be treated as individuals with personalized therapy, one of the trials I'm excited about is the KRYSTAL-7 trial. It's a trial for patients with KRAS mutations, and based on their PD-L1 score, their frontline therapy is assigned with or without immune therapy. So no chemotherapy is being used in this trial at all for this group of patients with recalcitrant cancer. I will admit that I was initially a doubter about the ability of this trial to enroll, and it has just enrolled so quickly. And I think it speaks to the fact that doctors and patients are still hungry to find chemotherapy-free regimens when possible. So the more we know upfront, i.e., NGS and PD-L1, the more we know, the more power we have to find the best option. For many, many patients, the majority of lung cancer patients that I treat, the best option will be chemoimmune therapy, and I'll consider durva, tremi, chemo.
Is there anything else that you'd like to speak about regarding this trial or the FDA approval before we move forward?
You know, as I think back about the POSEIDON trial, we opened that trial at Sarah Cannon, I think in 2017. Its name within our network was Lung 309. And it is an example of the importance of clinical research. We still find that between 3 and 5% of patients nationwide participate in clinical research. At Sarah Cannon, we really believe that clinical trials should be your first stop, not your last. And this trial is a good example of why.
Last question for you today. What would you say, just in general, have been the most important clinical trials of this past year?
Well, having told you that at Sarah Cannon, we try to put all patients on clinical trials, it is a little hard for me to choose. I love all of my clinical trials the same. But I will say that I'm proud of Poseidon. I'm proud of it. AstraZeneca should be proud of this new approval. It adds another option for patients. It potentially is an option for patients with more difficult to treat cancers. It was enrolled in the community as well as in academic sites. Sarah Cannon was led accrual to this effort, and I think it shows the power of what is possible in clinical research. And it reinforces one more time why next generation sequencing, i.e., to find STK11 and keep, is important in the front line prior to assigning therapy. I also think the CodeBreaK 200 trial was one of the more important trials of this year. CodeBreaK 200 established sotorasib, a KRAS G12C inhibitor, to be standard of care over docetaxel for patients with KRAS G12C mutations based on a 34% reduction in risk of progression or death, as well as many other secondary endpoints. Both trials are merely the springboard for 23, where I think we'll hear of other KRAS inhibitors, we'll see KRAS combination data readout. Maybe we'll combine targeted therapies and immunotherapy in 2023 successfully in a way that we have been combining chemotherapy and immune therapy for several years for our non-small cell lung cancer patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.